In our studies thus far, we've been talking about the plagues that were brought upon the Egyptians that resulted in the children of Israel being released. Yes. All right. Okay. Now that is a good question, Terry. He's going to answer that, isn't he? He seems so excited to answer that. Go right ahead. Yeah, that's the footnote here of the Hebrew. Yeah, I tell you what, scary thought. But my name, Jehovah, was not known to them. So it was a, pardon me? Yeah. 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 Well, the idea of Yahweh was the name of God spelled without any vowels. And the reason for that among the Jews was they wanted, from what I've read, to honor God, that they did not want to mispronounce His name. So they left out the vowels so they could not know how to pronounce His name in their spelling. That's interesting to me. But anyhow, that's El Shaddai is the footnote that is given in the American Standard translation. But they were not known by, or he was not known by Yahweh, Jehovah, unto them. That's a good question. I hadn't thought of that. Very good question. All right. Any other questions or comments before we begin? Okay. Yeah, that's good, Claire. I'm real proud of you. That's, I hadn't thought of that at all. Just plain old hadn't thought of that. Very good. All right. In our study, we've talked about the plagues brought upon the nation of Egypt to bring them up out of the land, or bring the Israelites up out of the land of bondage. And we talked about the death of the firstborn. And we noted that that would be the last plague, as I recall from the things that were said to Moses in the beginning of his work to go down and bring these people out in Exodus chapter 4 and in verses 22 and 23. He would go down and demand the release of these people. He would not let them go, but he will slay, he said, thy son, thy firstborn, and so it was. Now, when we come to chapter 12, we see the institution of the Passover feast. Now, essentially, this whole chapter discusses the observance of the Passover, and let me see if I can't put that like that, discusses the observance of the Passover, the institution and observance of the Passover. And I want to call your attention, though we'll not read the whole chapter necessarily, but I want to call your attention to how particular it was. In chapter 12, for example, beginning, we'll begin the reading at verse 1. It says, "And Jehovah spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months." I want you to note that, because if you're making a timeline, that's going to be significant. Their first day, first month started with the coming out of Egyptian bondage, and so things are going to be reckoned from that date. So when you read of something in their history occurring, say, 3 days, you know when. If it occurred 3 months, you know when. Here's the benchmark, the time of starting. But in verse 3, it says, "Speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the 10th day of this month they shall take to them every man a lamb according to their fathers' houses, a lamb for a household. And if a household be too little for a lamb, then shall he and his neighbor next to his house take one according to the number of the souls, according to every man's eating, shall he make your count or shall you make your count for the lamb? Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male, a year old. Ye shall take it from the sheep or from the goats, and ye shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at even, and they shall take of the blood and put it on the two side posts and on the lintel upon the houses wherein they shall eat it. And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire, unleavened and unleavened bread with bitter herbs shall they eat it. Eat not of it raw, nor boiled at all with water, but roast with fire, its head with its legs, and with the inwards thereof. And ye shall let nothing of it remain until the morning, but that which remaineth of it until the morning ye shall burn with fire. And thus shall ye eat it, with your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and ye shall eat it in haste. It is Jehovah's Passover. Well, I will go through the land of Egypt in that night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, against all the gods of Egypt. I will execute judgment. I am Jehovah. And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the houses where ye are, and when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and there shall no plague be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. Now let's pause there in the text. Notice the particulars about the sacrifice itself. Notice the particulars about the readiness of the people. Why were they to be fully clothed, have their shoes on, staff in hand, and so forth? They were to be ready to exit, to come out of the land of Egypt. You'll note that it was to be placed upon the two side posts and on the lintel of the houses. And then when death would occur throughout the land of Egypt, it would not occur in the houses where the lamb's blood was. He said, I will pass over when I see the blood. And so it was. Now this feast was something that was to be observed according to verse 24. It was to be observed for a perpetual ordinance, a yearly observance, that they might remind their children of the great things that God did in bringing them up out of the land of Egypt. Yes, go ahead, Joy. That's right. And Paul specifically made the point in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and in verse 7 that Christ is our Passover, as he was urging them or commanding them to purge out the old leaven that you might be a new lump. And, of course, the analogy is to this text. Okay, very good. David? Well, that's right. And, of course, there's a sermon in there, David. You may want to preach that sometime when you think about how specific God has always been. For example, regarding the tree of knowledge of good and evil, you can eat everything else, but you can't eat that one. And then when we come to the time of the priesthood was very specific. The sacrifices, very specific. When we think about this, of course, detailed in being specific. And we think about the building of the tabernacle, detail in being specific. The building of the temple, same thing. And those of you that are you as well as others in the class tonight, as we're studying through the book of Ezekiel, and we talk about the vision of the temple that Ezekiel saw, how that it was measured, and very, very specific. And there's reason for that. And when we come then to the New Testament and talk about the requirements of to be forgiven, joy covered by the blood of Christ, very specifics. very detailed specifics that are given and regarding the work and organization of the church and all of that, that gets back to your type and antitype illustration. Very specific. So there's a lesson in there somewhere. Dig all that out, and I think it would make a good sermon. Yeah. Yeah.
And the answer is no, it's not. When God is specific, you know, it's got to be done His way, and there is no other alternative.
Well, that's right. And we see great detail regarding the observance of this, as you see on the board, that was to be their last meal in Egypt. They're preparing to come out and to come out swiftly. Now, as they were to do this, the text tells us that they were to roast the lamb with fire. Its head with its legs and inwards. The lamb was not to be eaten raw, nor sodden with water or boiled with water. The eating of unleavened bread and bitter herbs and so forth. Eat in haste and so forth. Nothing to remain until the morning. If so, it was to be destroyed. And so we see the detail in regarding the institution of this Passover feast. Now, I want to call your attention to verse 24 and following, where it says, "Ye shall observe this thing for an ordinance to thee and to thy sons forever. And it shall come to pass, when ye are come to the land which Jehovah will give you, according as He has promised, that ye shall keep this service. And it shall come to pass, when your children shall say unto you, What mean ye by this service? That ye shall say, It is the sacrifice of Jehovah's Passover, who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt, when he smote the Egyptians and delivered our houses. And the people bowed the head and worshipped, and the children of Israel went and did so as Jehovah had commanded Moses and Aaron, so did they." This was to be a lesson or an object lesson. They were to use this to teach their children for generation upon generation. And then when we turn over into the book of Joshua, we see this to be observed. But yet we find in the book of Judges that they knew not God nor the mighty works that He had wrought in Israel. Chapter 2, verse 10. Somewhere along the course of time, now keep in mind that the period of the Judges lasted a little bit over 300 years thereabouts. And of course, by the time they leave Egypt to come into the promised land, how much time has passed? 40 years, thank you, Lynn. 40 years, time for a generation to die. But somewhere along the course of time, somebody has not taught these valuable lessons. Now, we might grant and say, well, the Passover feast has been observed. But somewhere along the way, the valuable lessons have been lost. Now, when we think about the observance of the Passover by Jesus and the apostles, we've seen that it was to be an annual feast, and it was being exercised during the time of Jesus. We note in Acts chapter 2 that we're reading about the first Pentecost following the resurrection of Christ, which was 50 days after the observance of the Passover. And we note that one of the reasons why Jerusalem was so filled with people is that Jews came from all over the known world to the city of Jerusalem to observe the Jewish feast Passover, and many times remained during the time of the observance of Pentecost. So Peter has somewhat of an elite group of people on that occasion in Acts chapter 2. But we note, Joy, the when, the where, the how, and all kinds of grave details given regarding the observance of this meal we want to note. Now, regarding the Passover, we know that that was a part of the Old Testament commandments. It's not required of us. That was nailed to the cross. It became a shadow of something else, fulfilled in Christ as He died on the cross and became our Passover, 1 Corinthians chapter 5. But as we continue here in the 12th chapter of the book of Exodus, how many people came up out of the land of Egypt after the death of the firstborn? I want you to note this passage. Pardon me? Perhaps a couple of million. I want you to be well familiar with the text of verses 36 and 37. In verse 36 in particular, well, back up to verse 35, it says, "And the children of Israel did according to the word of Moses, and they asked of the Egyptians jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment. And Jehovah gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they let them have what they asked, and they despoiled the Egyptians." Now, we know that as far back from as Genesis 15, when God said that they would come out with great substance. And here we note that they did. But then in verse 37, "And the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth, about 600,000 on foot that were men besides children." Now, if you go further over into the book of Exodus, you might want to note Exodus chapter 38, in verse 26, where the number is 603,550 fighting men. Now, from that, those of you who are the mathematicians in the family work the statistics on that, and scholars tell us we're up in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 million people that came up out of the land of Egypt. That's a lot of people. When God told Abraham at the time that he had no children, that he would make of him a great nation. Now, I'm going to throw this out. I'm not prepared to discuss it. So I'm going to throw it out as I have once before, and I want you to think about it. Look, if you will, please, at verse 40. Verse 40. Verse 40. It says, "Now the time that the children of Israel dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of 430 years, even the selfsame day, it came to pass that all the host of Jehovah went out from the land of Egypt. It is a night to be much observed unto Jehovah for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is that night of Jehovah to be much observed of all the children of Israel throughout their generations." Now, when you remember back to Genesis chapter 15, when Abraham first came into the promised land, his question when he arrived and saw that there were other peoples there, they too had flocks and herds and so forth. And Abraham's question was, how do I know that this is going to be mine? And how did God respond to him? How do I know? We'll go back to Genesis 15. Let's turn to it. Genesis 15. Read verse 8. "And he said, O Lord Jehovah, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it?" Wouldn't that question seem to be a good one when you come into the land and there's people already there? How do I know that this is going to be mine? Well, we read beginning in verse 9 regarding an offering that was to be made. But if you'll drop down to verse 13, we begin to see God's answer. He said, "Know of a surety that thy seed shall be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge. And afterward shall they come out with great substance." That last portion we just noted. Yes, 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 this is how God was speaking to him. But he said, you're going to receive it, but four generations from now, you're going to receive it. Now, what does that tell Abraham? You won't be alive to see it. That's right. That's why we see over in the Hebrew letter, the 11th chapter, we learn that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were sojourners, you see. Now, four generations after, they come in and take the land. Now, here's the kicker to the question. All right? God told Abraham it's going to be 400 years. When we look at the text of Exodus chapter 12, it tells us that the children of Israel dwelt in Egypt 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of 430 years, even the selfsame day. I want you to underscore that in your thinking. It came to pass that all the host of Jehovah went out from the land of Egypt. And then it's described the night to be remembered, or the night to be much observed. Now my question is this. Do you see, David, we were talking about specifics. Is God specific when He speaks to Abraham regarding the time when they're going to come out with great substance? Yeah. Just how specific was He? The selfsame day. That's right. Here's the very day that God had in mind when He spoke to Abraham way back in Genesis 14. Now, the thing or Genesis 15, the thing that's a curiosity to me is the measuring of the time from the time God spoke to Abraham till the time that they came out. When we come into the New Testament, we note in Galatians chapter 3, you might begin reading, 17, I was thinking about backing up to verse 15, but get on the right page. Yeah, let's go ahead and begin the reading at verse 15, if you would please, Randy, and read down through verse 17. Oh, okay.
Brethren, I speak in the matter of men, though we know that man's covenant is confirmed, no one annuls or adds to it. Now that Abraham is deceived when the promise is made, he does not say as deceived as many, but as one, as your seed is Christ. And this I say, the law, which was 430 years later, cannot annul the covenant which was confirmed before God before by God of Christ, that it should make the promise of no effect.
All right, now there's a whole lot of argumentation that's made regarding the period of time that was actual slavery. And of course, we know that while Joseph lived, though Jacob and the other sons and their families that came down into the land of Goshen were well favored, they were not slaves at that time. We know that it was after the death of Joseph that another Pharaoh took the throne that did not feel so kindly toward these people as they grew and multiplied and made slaves out of them. Now, the figuring of that 430 years, I'm going to throw that out and let you work on that as how you want to figure that. But we know that when God was speaking to Abraham, He had some specifics in mind. Go ahead. I know it is. That's why I ask it. And you're going to answer it for us, right? Okay.
When we read Galatians 3:17, I think many times we start reading, now this I say, a covenant confirmed beforehand by God. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In Exodus 12.
Okay.
So if you look at the meaning of the Greek word there in Galatians 3:17, confirmed before does not
Okay. 3 and 4. Okay. Terry and I have talked about this somewhat regarding the words that are used here and whether or not those words are always used to define a confirmation, as it were. And we've got some work yet to do, I think, to establish the exact usage of those words. But that's a very plausible argument. I've thought about that and thought about that and almost swung my view from the 215 years to the 430 years, though I'm not 100% on it. Go ahead.
Well, we always say that the promises were given to Abraham, but the same promises were given to Isaac, the same promises were given to Jacob. Moses was up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights. God gave him a lot of instruction, confirmed a lot of the covenant to him, essentially gave them the same instructions to, in perhaps in different words, that he did to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Moses received the confirmation of the words that were given to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob 430 years after they had been taken into captivity. I don't see any problem with the 400 years statement back in Genesis, wherever it was, because they were there for 400 years. They were there for 430 years. That's 30 years more than 400 years. So certainly they were there for 400 years.
Well, there's no discrepancy between the 400 and 430. I think one's just rounded off of the other. That's no issue. Well, we made an assumption, I think, that the 30 years was a period of time when Joseph was in and the people were in good favor. I don't know how in the world you would establish that. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's the assumption, though, that that period of time was the period when they were in good favor with the Egyptians. I don't know that, except just from the mathematical equation, that we can be definite about that. Terry and then Randy. As slaves.
That's the real issue being discussed here.
It is, and to factor in lists of genealogies and so forth fits into that equation somewhere. And I mentioned at the beginning of this, it's not my purpose necessarily to discuss all these numbers in great detail, because I really don't think that it's necessary. Some look at this and call it an alleged discrepancy in the Bible. But if it can be explained, then it is no longer a discrepancy. Sometimes folks say, well, I don't get it, I don't understand it. That doesn't mean it's not understandable. Does that make sense to you? It doesn't mean that it's a discrepancy. The point being is God was true to His promise. What He promised to Abraham way back when, He fulfilled to the self same day, just as He had planned it. John? Yeah. Well, because Paul uses the expression 430 years in Galatians chapter 3 very specifically to describe from Abraham to the law. You see, from Abraham to the law, not from Jacob to the law. Okay, so that messing with those numbers, some want to try to fill in the blanks. And that makes a good exercise. But when you're through, what have you established? Really, what have you spent your time doing? A good exercise. But we know what this says. Now, the point of Paul in using the 430 years is to show that time did not change the promise that God made to Abraham. He said, even after a covenant is confirmed, time doesn't change it. You don't add to it, you don't take away from it. And one of the thoughts I want to suggest here regarding the Galatian letter that I think does have some relevance to our study is, if you will note in verse 15, and this is one of the reasons, Randy, I wanted to back up to that verse. He said, I speak after the manner of men, though it be but a man's covenant, yet when it hath been confirmed, no one maketh it void or addeth thereto. Now to Abraham were the promises spoken, and to his seed. And then he tells us who that is. But the promise that was made to Abraham, context is so important to any study. If you'll back up to the Galatian letter, 3rd chapter, and look at verse 8, you see this quotation from Genesis chapter 12. In thy seed, or in thee, shall all nations be blessed. Now we know what that promise was because Paul, in writing to the Galatians, is writing to churches that are disturbed because some believe that the promise that God made to Abraham was a particular benefit to the Jew, the nation of the Jews. And Paul said, no, that's not it. The promise made to Abraham was the seed, singular, thy seed which is Christ, and he would be a blessing to all nations or all families of the earth, both Jews and Gentiles, and what would that blessing be? You see, we don't ever want to miss that. When God made promise to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12, in thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed, God was promising salvation. He was promising forgiveness, remission of sins. We know that so because that's what Paul develops in Galatians chapter 3. We know that so because that's the very point that Peter makes in Acts chapter 3 when he too quotes from Genesis chapter 12. Now question, did 430 years, did 215 years, did it do anything to what God promised? Yep, been there. Yeah, verses 3 and 4. That's right. Some make that argument. Yeah, that's right. But Paul backs it up in Galatians 3 all the way to Abraham. Pardon me? Say that again. Explain. Yeah, exactly. But it started with Abraham. Yeah. Yeah. No. Till Moses on Mount Sinai. But it began with Abraham. That's right. Yeah. On Mount Sinai, with the giving of the law. Yeah. Well, that's right. Now, let's not lose his point. His point is, when that was confirmed to Moses on Mount Sinai, it didn't change the promise that was made way back originally to Abraham. Now, that's the point I'm trying to establish. It started with Abraham. I didn't intend to leave the impression it was made to Abraham alone, but it was started with Abraham. And that's the quotation we see and Paul's reference in verses 7 and 8 of Galatians chapter 3. He's talking about what God said to Abraham. No. I didn't say that. Did anybody understand me to say that it was just made to Abraham? Well, I want to clear that, because that's not so. No. Some are trying to account for the 430 years without including Abraham. Or some are trying to back it up to include Abraham. I'll send you the information. You can read their arguments yourself. I don't need to do that here, but. Well, it becomes an irrelevant point. You know, the point Paul is making, and let me hasten to say this in Galatians chapter 3, as he quotes the promise when God made it to Abraham, I believe in Genesis 12, in verses 7 and 8 of Galatians chapter 3. That's who he's referencing as he speaks concerning the faith of Abraham, and he quotes that portion of the promise. But Paul's point is not this complicated. His point is very simple, that time, I don't care how long it is, if it's 400, 430, 215, it doesn't make any difference how long of time passed. It didn't change what God promised. Now, his illustration, I think, speaks to that. When you look at verse 15, even regarding the covenant that's made with men, when it has been confirmed, folks don't change it. Well, when you go and make a will with an attorney and put it on file, what happens to it? It sits there. Now, if you change a little bit of it, what happens to all of it? It's all null and void. Now, friend, isn't that Paul's argument? Look at the verse in verse 15 of Galatians 3. He said, though it be but a man's covenant, yet when it hath been confirmed, no one maketh it void or addeth thereto. Now to Abraham were the promises, there we see a plural use of the word, spoken, but then he refers to the promise. When he speaks to thy seed, not many, but one which is Christ. Now this I say, a covenant confirmed beforehand by God, the law which came 430 years, doth not disannul so as to make the promise of none effect. His point is simple. With the giving of the law, it did not change what God said to Abraham. Didn't change it. Now, I think sometimes we make a real big mistake just here when we read the next couple of verses and we say, well, the law was added. Look at your Bible, Galatians chapter 3, in verse 18. He says, for if the inheritance is of the law, it is no more promised, but God hath granted it to Abraham by promise. What then is the law? It was added because of transgressions till the seed should come to whom the promise hath been made. Let's pause right there. We read this text, say the law was added. What was it added to? Thank you. All right, we'll elaborate on that. Yes. If it was added, as many argue, it was added to the law. Or added rather to the promise, I'm sorry. That the law was added to the promise. What would that do to the promise? It would nullify it. That's his argument. So the giving of the law, the passing of time, didn't change the promise that initiated to Abraham in Genesis 12. Yes. Go for it. Well, I can send you the material. We can make that argument too. Yeah. It's the difference between the time of Abraham till the time of the, I believe, the coming up out of, not coming up out of the land of Egypt, but Joseph and his family going down into Egypt. Yeah. Well, we start with Abraham being 75 years old in Genesis 12, then being 100 years old when Isaac is born. And then Isaac, when he had Jacob and Esau, was 60 years old. And Then from Jacob's birth to the going down into Egypt, he was 130 years old. And you tally all that up and you can come out from Genesis 12 to Genesis 46 with 215 years. As you look at the ages of the people is where the number comes from. All right. All right. All right. Yeah. Basically so. So it's rounded off, the number that Paul gives. It'd be rounded off. Yeah. No, I probably wouldn't think of that either. Maybe 30 or 40. 40 or 50. Okay. Okay. Joseph was 110. Yeah, 110. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, I can send you the measurements of the years if you'd like to study that and explore it further, but I don't think that it's something that's that relevant to our study. Our point is the passing of time did not change what God said. Now, you see why I preface my statements. I don't really want to use our class time to discuss that in great detail. Because it gets into a mathematical conquest. Yeah, we just did, didn't we? We just used it for that. But anyhow, when you look at the text of Exodus chapter 12, we've got them coming out of the land of Egypt, 2 to 3 million people. And of course, then when we come into the 13th chapter, we've got the consecration of the firstborn, and then the 14th chapter, the crossing over of the Red Sea. Now, that's going to enter us into another interesting discussion that's not going to last very long, okay, regarding the identity of the crossing of the Red Sea. And let me just hasten to say, I don't know where it was. You don't either, because it's not given us in Scripture. We don't know where the crossing is. We can presume. Now, what basis would we have to presume anything? Well, where some of the encampments were, where we know the Scriptures identify that they encamped in places that they did stop. But then you get into problems with being hard-nosed about the locations of these cities that we do know they stopped in. And so that creates some problems of location as well. But we're going to use, if you'll notice this map and those that are in your lesson book, we're going to use the traditional maps regarding the travels of the children of Israel as they came to Mount Sinai and received the law. Now, the first two camping places were at Succoth in Genesis chapter 12 and at Etham in Genesis chapter 13 in verse 20. Now, you can see those on the map and begin to formulate a pretty good idea, I guess, of the direction that they're traveling and the places that they stopped. Now, if you'll note how they were led. How were they led as they came out of Egypt? Well, chapter 13, verses 22, or 20 and 22, or through 22, tells us that they were led by a pillar of fire during the day, and then it became, all right, night, and cloud by day. And that shows us how God led them from place to place. Question or comment just here? Yeah.
Just for a clarification, because I know it's confusing to some, that they considered the Gulf of Suez and the Gulf of Aqaba to be part of the Red Sea.
Yeah.
Not just the part down below the end of the peninsula was considered part of the Red Sea. The Egyptians, the Gulf of Suez is just as much a part of the Red Sea as the Gulf of Aqaba.
Yeah. 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 Randy, and then John.
For 2 million people to walk, you know, how much distance can they walk? still in the plowing. So the water gets that over.
Mm-hmm. That does. Very good. That makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense. So instead of being down here in what we typically think of as the body of the Red Sea, this would be more likely for the sake of time. Yeah. Very good. All right. Now we note that they take Joseph's bones with them. Interesting observation in Genesis chapter 50. Joseph was well familiar with those things that God had promised. I'm sorry, John. How long between leaving Egypt and crossing the Red Sea? Well, let's go back to the text. In Genesis chapter I don't know, John. I'm not seeing what I'm looking for. In fact, I'm not sure that there's a specific time that is given. I know that in chapter 14, in verse 3, the report was to come to Pharaoh that the children of Israel are lost. And God said, I will harden Pharaoh's heart and he will follow after them. Verse 4. And we see his reasoning through the rest of that paragraph. I don't know, John, that there's a passage that tells us specifically how long. In fact, it would probably be a legitimate question to ask just what marked the border of Egypt that would identify they're out. Certainly when they came across the Red Sea, they were out. I don't know, John. I'm not seeing what I'm looking for. There may not be a specific answer to your question. It would be a relatively short period of time for them to travel the distance that they came to come to the sea. Verse 13 and 14. I don't know. I'll have to read some, John. I'm sorry.